Hey Dreamers, this is Brittany from Virginia, and I just want to tell you that anything is possible with hard work and time, and it is so worth the effort once you get there.
This is the Dreamers Podcast, where dreamers share their stories to inspire you. Now, join host Joe Pardo as he interviews a dreamer who's living their dreams.
Hey Dreamers, I'm Joe Pardo, and today I'm talking with Casey Lane, who is making her dreams come true by being the DJ entrepreneur. DJ entrepreneur.
Hey, no.
It's DJpreneur, and it's specifically the DJpreneur.com. Glad to have you on the show, Casey.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited. We finally got our time zones in check here. Thank you so much for having me on.
All the way from Singapore.
Yes. Yes. I'm in the future right now. It's 11 p.m. right now, and I just got done with a DJ gig.
So. You know, it's funny that Singapore is exactly 12 hours. So you would think it would make it, like, very easy to just be like, hey, it's 12 hours. It's the opposite. As opposed to if it was, like, 9 hours or 8 hours, you know, then you start to get kind of – it gets thrown off a little bit.
But. You'll be surprised. Sometimes I think, like, you guys are in the future, and, like, I end up, like, writing stuff down on my calendar and, like, God, yeah. So, anyway, that's
– Well, Casey, why don't you give some background about yourself, how you got, you know, into DJing and how you end up in Singapore?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So actually, I'm originally from Wisconsin, so a really small town in between Milwaukee and Chicago. So I kind of grew up in that, you know, that like Chicago house scene, you know, back in the late 90s, early 2000. I was in high school going to raves and telling my mom, you know, that I was sleeping at girlfriend's house when I was really like driving 8 hours away to go to a party. But she doesn't know about that. So eventually, I went into the military after I graduated high school because I needed to go to college and I had no money. So that was like my way of thinking like, oh, this is a really great thing. And then 9/11 happened. So it really wasn't that great anymore. But a really great thing about like electronic music and like people that go to raves and like DJs is like you kind of like are attracted to those people. Like even though you're wearing like a uniform, like you can kind of tell like certain people just the way they like they look around or, you know, the way they maybe the way they work out or what kind of music that you can hear what they're listening to. So I connected with a group of like guy DJs when I was in the Air Force, and I would always tell them what to play, and they were like, no, you got to do it. You got to do it. And I was like, so that's how I kind of like fell into DJing. I was kind of like forced into it because they got sick of me requesting all the time. So fast forward that 5 years, I really didn't, I just like DJed as a hobby, picked it up again when I was living in Milwaukee, when I actually finally used my GI Bill and started going to college. As really close with a lot of people in Milwaukee that were DJs and kind of learned from them. Got my first gig in Milwaukee as well. And then soon after that, I started traveling because I'm also a gymnastics coach. So by day, I'm a gymnastics coach. And by night, I'm a DJ and a DJpreneur. So I started moving from like Bermuda. Then I moved to China. And then I moved to Singapore, all pretty much with the gymnastics background, but then I also did like touring and different events DJing on the side. So that's how it came to how I've been traveling around. When I moved to Singapore, I realized like I could really capitalize on things that I've learned when I was in China. This is when I was working in China with a gymnastics. I also worked at a DJ booking agency. So I learned a lot of the back end and what, you know, what needs to happen for things to fall into place. So when I moved to Singapore, I kind of took the things that I learned and applied it to my own career. People started asking me questions like, oh, how are you getting gigs? Like you're new here. Like, you know, how do you do this? How do you do that? And I can't remember, but for some reason, I reached out to Phil at Digital DJ Tips. And I was like, hey, I want to do an article about female DJs and why we are unequal. That post went viral after I wrote that. And then I would always get like emails, like every couple weeks, I would get like an email from like either a female DJ or like a male DJ saying like, hey, like, I love like your tips that you gave in this article. And that kind of like fueled me to write even more. So I started writing for different websites. I started doing it on my own blog. But then I realized like, hey, if people come to my CaseyLane.com and they see I'm a DJ, but then I'm also giving other people advice. It kind of gives people like a different, it kind of confused people. So then last year in May, I decided to start the DJpreneur. It kind of made sense to me is, you know, I'm DJing. I'm making pretty good money at it, and I'm teaching other people how to do it. That's how the DJpreneur came into play. It was just kind of, it wasn't like I just thought of this idea. It just was like one step after another, based on like feedback that people were giving me. So that's how I created the DJpreneur, and yeah. So that's about it.
Well, Casey, first, thanks for your service.
Oh yeah, no, wasn't it like some like holiday recently for like veterans or something? Memorial Day.
Memorial Day. Yes. I mean, by the time this comes out, it'll be Veterans Day. So
yeah, that's true. Well, I haven't been in America in like 6 years, I think, and I forget all the holidays. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. So when you were getting started with the DJpreneur.com, mm-hmm. What were some of the first steps? I mean, did you already know how to do websites, build websites and all that? Or was this all new to you as well?
Well, I'd been starting, I had a couple of different blogs, you know, just like I did stuff on Blogger and then I did stuff on WordPress, and I designed like my own website at CaseyLane.com. I'm redesigning that. That's another story. So I started around 2009. So that's about 6 years. So I designed the DJpreneur on my own. I taught myself HTML and some CSS coding as well along the way. And I also built websites for other entrepreneurs or people that needed help with building a course for their business. Cause like, I was like, hey, I already built one. I just didn't make the course. I know how to do this. I can do it for you in like 8 hours. So, it's all been DIY and learn a lot of time behind, or a lot of time just watching YouTube tutorials on how to like fix a piece of code or anything and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, yeah, with the internet, you have every bit of knowledge in the world at your fingertips. You just have to know how to ask.
That's true. I found like a lot of help with just like this entrepreneur like group. There's so many entrepreneur groups that I'm in on Facebook. And if I ever have a question, like I know I could get an answer, or somebody will point me in a direction to somebody's opt-in, so where I have to opt in. But there's a lot of knowledge out there, and I think for the most part, people really want to help, really want other people to learn as well.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I think it's funny how the idea of asking and knowing how to ask is also pretty much probably how you wound up getting all your DJ gigs.
Yeah, totally. It's kind of like in that way of not being like a douchebag.
Well, I would love for you to share some of that knowledge as far as you know, getting started, being a woman and trying to go into a field where it's pretty primarily dominated by men and trying to stick out differently as a DJ.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different like paradoxes like surrounded by being like a female DJ, and I'll give you like a really crazy example. When I was in China and I was doing gigs, like I would get gigs just because I was a female, And like, I knew that. And like a lot of people are like, oh, she's just getting gigs because she's a female. But then I would, you know, DJ at a party and they'd be like, okay, she's a really good DJ. But there were a lot of times when I would do events or certain, I would get booked for a certain club from a friend of a friend who really didn't know who I was and didn't know how to like explain that I'm an underground house DJ, that I, you know, that I don't go out and I don't like wear like fancy clothes and I don't show cleavage and I don't, that's not the type of DJ that I am. So there would be like these Chinese business owners that would assume that that's the type of DJ that they were getting when they were booking me through a friend of a friend. At one point I had a club owner like say like, no, you can't DJ like that. And when I came up to a gig and he like came back with this like bikini, like sparkly shit for me to DJ in. I was like, hell no, I'm not doing that. And I left. So lesson that I learned is like, if you don't brand yourself and you don't present yourself in a certain way, people can assume that you're going to do whatever or assume that you're a certain way or a certain DJ or a certain type of person. So this is like something that I've taken into my DJing career and also my the way I present myself with a DJpreneur. Like I don't want to hide anything, you know, either like a fault or something stupid, like, oh my God, my tooth's not in right now. I have a fake tooth. These are some of the things, like if you're not true to yourself, if you aren't confident in who you are and you don't express that, you can't expect to be hired or booked, or you can't expect people to buy from you if they don't know the real you, or if they think, if there's so many holes in the story of you, they're not going to feel like that it's the genuine you, or they're going to fill in that story themselves and it might not be the right way. So that's essentially like what I'm trying to say, is a kind of roundabout way of saying it. For me, like when I moved to Singapore, I only knew one person. Actually, I'll take that back. I knew two people. I knew a girl that I lived in Shanghai with. She was from Singapore. And I knew one guy who I knew just from emailing back and forth from the booking agency. So when I moved to Singapore, he was the only person I really knew in the whole country. And I went to him one day and I was like, hey, I don't have any equipment. And I really want to come. I really want to like practice DJing. And he was like, hey, did you know that I have a club? And I was like, no, I had no idea. Like, I really didn't know that this guy had a club. He's like, hey, just bring your stuff up. Come in practice like before the club opens. So I would go there and like practice. And then he like gave me a couple of gigs like right on the spot after he heard me DJing. So I think like he kind of felt like I wasn't trying to get anything from him at first, you know, because I just said like, hey, I just want to practice. I don't want a gig, you know. If I would have probably went to him and said like, hey, give me a gig. Like, I know who you are. Like, you know, give me a gig. Like, we wouldn't have this relationship that we have. You know, like you said, like there's a certain way of asking about it. And like, I wasn't asking him for a gig, and probably he probably sensed that. So maybe that's why that opportunity opened up for me.
I think it's more something like you were asking for a favor rather than demanding to, you know, for him to do your job of finding you gigs.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think that's something that it's really difficult for me because I live in Singapore and like people are always traveling here or whatever. And people put me in a really difficult spot because they're like, hey, can you find me gigs? And it's like, well, okay, you need me to find you gigs, even though I don't, like, I know these people, but I haven't seen them DJ. I don't know, like, I haven't seen them DJ in a long time. So I don't know, you know, how they work a crowd and I don't know how to do this. And it puts me in a kind of funny spot because I know different places here in Singapore I know what their crowd is like. I know the management, and I don't want to ruin a relationship that I have with a venue or a promoter or a manager there by saying, hey, can you get my friend a gig? And then it not working out nicely. I've already had that happen. And I think that goes with not just like gigs, but like introducing people that you would think, you know, would benefit. Each side would benefit from that introduction. You know, sometimes I just have to say, no, I can't.
You have to feel confident in the product in which you're showing, you know, I mean, that's a testament to you and a testament to the people that know you, that know that you're not just going to show up with anybody and just be like, yeah, put this guy on.
Right.
Or this girl on, you know, it's not, you're not like that. That's not how you operate. And that's, by and large, a pretty good way to, it's like if you really love a job that you work at, right? You don't want to just bring, you know, you got your bum friend who really sucks at doing everything he's ever tried at or she's ever tried at. And you're like, yeah, let me just, I'll give you a reference. Sure, why not? And then it's like, you're looking bad.
Definitely.
Because they didn't put them in the mailroom. They put them in the office, making decisions and working with high-level people. You know, you have to feel confident in what you say. And what you promote. So, totally understandable. So, how does your family take all this DJing?
Like my family back home in America or?
Yeah,
family here.
Well, I guess both.
Well, my family in America, I still don't think like they know what I do. Like my mother, like when I was like telling her like I was traveling, you know, I was like, I'm traveling to Doha, you know, I've got a gig there. I'm traveling somewhere in China. And she'd be like, oh my God, what are you doing? I'm like, it's okay. They're paying for it. I don't have to pay for shit. She's like, oh, just be careful. Just be careful. But she's never seen me DJ. My sister is like knows about it. Like my sister used to be like a raver and like she's into house music too. So like she gets into it. My brother, I really don't know what he thinks about it. But when they came to visit me, my mother came to visit with my last my youngest daughter that was born a year and a half ago. And I took her to like some of the places that I DJ at. She was just kind of blown away. Because Singapore is like this huge, huge metropolis, and like I DJ on the 57th floor of one of the most iconic buildings in Singapore, and kind of taking my mom up there and saying like, hey, this is what I do. I get to like, you know, I get to like be here every week and meet the coolest people, and you never know who gets to come up. And she was really proud of me. She was like, this is really cool. So it's really nice to know that like my mom is a little bit more accepting, or she kind of knows what I do. And then my family here, my daughter knows what I do. She knows that I DJ like every weekend. She's like, Mama, no DJ. My husband, we met on a dance floor and we have all mutual friends. So, he's cool with it. He just gets mad because, like, if he can't, like, MC, because my husband is an MC, so, like, if he can't MC at a party, he doesn't go out. But I understand. I'm like, I wouldn't want to go out all the time anyways if I wasn't DJing, so, yeah.
Well, you know, for your mom's sake, it's a long way home, you know, from home in Wisconsin.
Yeah, definitely.
So I could totally understand, like, trying to explain something that you've never, maybe have never even seen in your life. You know, I don't know if your mom has ever traveled much at all.
Not a lot.
Yeah. So it, you know, to visualize like these giant buildings and a metropolis and stuff, and it's like the cow population probably rivals the human population. it's hard to comprehend. So, But you know, it's great that they're supportive and that you're able to do all this as well as teaching gymnastics, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah. So I teach at the American School here in Singapore, and it's about 2 to 3 hours a day, so it's not that bad. I do that in the afternoon, and then, you know, some nights I go and DJ, some nights I'm on the internet doing my DJpreneur stuff. So it gives me like a lot of flexibility to melt all my passions. Like, I love gymnastics, I love DJing, I love teaching, and I get to hang out with my kids like every day. So it's perfect.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man. It's like, if I would have like tried to plan this out, I don't think I could have. Like, everything just kind of fell into place, so it's great.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where it's like you take all these little steps and you don't necessarily see how they're all linked together, you know, in one way or another. And then you turn around and look and you're like, oh, wow, like, look at all what, you know, what's behind me, all these steps that I've hit behind me. And they all really were all the same, you know, the same stairway.
I love that analogy. That's a really great way of putting it. Because I think like there's like a certain amount of like there's a certain strategy for like how I've been doing stuff, and it's been like that my whole life, and I just never realized it, you know, to where like I'm, you know, able to move up in like the gymnastics community, how I'm able to like, you know, move up and like become like somebody that people look up to in the DJing community. So it's kind of I love that analogy, and I think that's something that people should be recognizing a little bit earlier on in their lives.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's hard. I mean, but you have to just be accepting of the path, you know? You just have to trust that, like, hey, as long as you're making steps towards something, you're probably building towards some, you know, going somewhere.
Right.
And I just realized that myself. I didn't just come up with the analogy, but I just realized when I went to go do my first school assembly, and I'm like, wow, I was like, you know, this really takes like everything I've been working towards. So like, you know, DJing since I was, you know, 17, and, you know, wanted to be a child psychologist when I grew up, when I was 6 years old. So like, I get to do like a little bit of all this stuff and then wrap it together and then have awesome and toilet paper, you
That's
know, throw
so
toilet
awesome.
Paper all over kids and stuff with their toilet paper guns. So,
That's crazy.
Yeah. So it's really interesting, like how to work a crowd and how to read a crowd and all that stuff. That's like I learned, you know, when I was 17, 18, 19 years old, and then utilizing it 10 years later for something that's not total, you know, has little to do with DJing at all.
Right. That's so cool.
So what's been the biggest roadblock for you amongst all these?
I think like the biggest roadblock for me is actually believing in myself. You know, like for like all of like last year, I was really kind of scared. I was too scared. I didn't think I was good enough. I didn't think people would listen to me. And I didn't think like people would take me seriously as somebody that could teach somebody. You know, how to live their self, like live their life, like amazing and DJing. Like, you know, I'm not a superstar DJ, but that's not for me. I never wanted that. Like I wanted this life and I have it. I want other people to have that life as well. Like whatever it is, just because like, I always had these like little whispers in my ear saying like, oh, they're not going to listen to you. They're not going to follow you. They're not going to email you, or they're not going to be on your email list because you're not this big, huge superstar DJ. Like, you know, I always would think like, why would somebody want to listen to me? And then I was like, hey, well, you know, because I'm really the only one that's actually teaching people how to get gigs, and you know, everybody else is teaching like the technical side. So once I got over that like fear of like, what are people going to think of you? Then I really kind of stepped into this whole DJpreneur thing. And it's kind of the same thing, with my own DJing career too. It was like, I didn't feel I was good enough, so I didn't get any gigs for a long time. The self-confidence and the self-belief is so, so truly the biggest thing I think that prevents anybody. And, you know, I work with really young athletes. I used to work with high-level performance gymnasts, and it was all in their brain, you know, and like that mental focus and that mental mindset that you have is really, it's either going to propel you or it's going to stop you dead in your tracks.
Well, Casey, I couldn't agree more about the mental aspect of it, but what are some of the ways that you overcome that?
Oh God. You know what? It wasn't like I could like tell myself like, this is going to be awesome. You know, it was a lot of like help from my friends. Like I don't tell a lot of people about like my goals and my plans with my company. Like even my husband, like I really didn't tell him much because like he just thought I was spending a lot of time, a lot of hours for nothing because I wasn't monetizing in any way. So I felt like I didn't have any support from him in that way. But I did find, you know, a handful of people. And being able to have like somebody to be like supportive and help keep you accountable for things, it actually really boosts your own your own way of thinking as well. So I'm sorry, I really don't have any really major tips on how to switch that mindset. I did do a lot of reading, like self-help books, and I listened to a lot of other, you know, actually. Some athlete mindset books helped me a lot because you can switch that into like a business mindset. So I have like this book called The Athlete Warrior, and I read that like 5 times. And it was a lot of like visualization stuff that I did that helped me. But I would definitely say it's that support of the people that don't have any bias about what you're doing. And somebody that could be like help keep you accountable for the things that you're going to say that you do. Because even like those, something as small as like, I'm going to do, you know, I'm going to schedule my emails for the whole month. Like that is a huge accomplishment for somebody to do. And like, kind of like to celebrate that those small accomplishments with somebody really get like, it boosts your self-esteem. Like you get those like endorphins going and it just snowballs on top of it. So when something bigger happens, you get even more excited. So that's, I guess how I overcome it in the past year.
Now, when you say schedule emails, are you saying scheduling the actual, time for when you will work on emails?
Oh, well, actually I do that too. So, for my like content calendar, I have like, days that I create, content. And then I have days that I'm like doing, you know, like doing photos and doing stuff. I have another day where that's when all the stuff broadcasts out. I have another day for editing. So yeah, it took me a while to find a system that worked for me. But yeah, just these like little things that I could share with like my girlfriend and say like, hey, I did this to this. Because it feels good when somebody could say like, all right, yes, you drafted a blog post. You rock. Keep going.
Well, yeah, you do have to be able to celebrate the little victories and be able to see the path in front of you so that you could say, hey, this is what this is going to help me with. And even though a lot of times we can find ourselves treadmilling, if you will, where you're doing a whole lot of stuff but you're not actually moving forward,
right?
It's what you define as success. You know, in your husband's case, it's like, okay, well, you're spending all this time, but it's not bringing in any money.
Right.
That's totally understandable. But at the same time, the game that both you and I are playing right now is not a short term, like generate a product,
right,
like this pen here and start selling this pen door to door. Where each time you get a yes, that you get a little bit of money and a little bit of money and a little bit of money. Mm-hmm. It's more of a, you know, planning a whole field, like planning in the farm sense, to go back to Wisconsin, planting a field of corn or something, and then hoping that everything will just come up at once.
Yeah, yeah.
Or at least in stages that you planted them.
Definitely.
Yeah, so and you don't know. You won't know, you know, for weeks, months, or sometimes even years whether or not it's going to work out. But the better seeds you plant now, the better your future could be. I mean, if you didn't take up DJing years and years ago, who knows where you would be right now?
Right, exactly. Who knows? And I think, you know, with that, there's been a lot of, like, planning aspect, you know, through, like, the DJpreneur and a lot of, like, shifting gears. And I think, like, a huge, huge part of getting my husband to actually, like, realize that, like, hey, you got your stuff going. You got, like, he started kind of having a different shift in his views and what I was doing is when I actually, like, put everything on pieces of paper around, like, all my, like, mind maps and everything, so that he could truly understand, like, what was happening in the business, that it wasn't just, like, me on the computer and, like, doing a blog post. Like, there are a lot of, like, different pieces to this puzzle, and I think those different pieces, like, when they all come together, that's how it's going to, like, pull out that blanket for you.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, the part of that, though, is sometimes we as the people doing it need to identify this a little bit quicker sometimes and really let our spouses in on what's going on. But, you know, sometimes we need to let our spouses in and let them know, like, day-to-day things so they could see, like, hey, okay, they could see progress, not just, like, you show up and, like, hey, oh, you know, I know it's been 3 or 6 or 9 months or a year, and now all of a sudden there's money, but that whole time they're just sitting there scratching their head, like, well, what are you doing? Or sometimes, and I love it. I love it, and it's some of those blessing and a curse things. It's like days where I'll get caught up just talking to people. Like, that'll be that everybody just wants to message me, and they'll just be message after message after message after message, and before I know it, 2 or 3 hours goes by, and I feel like I'm back in high school where I had, like, 3 or 4 or 5 chat windows going on at once, and yeah, I'm trying to, like, balance 4 conversations at once. But at the same time, it's like, okay, so I accomplished, you know, relationship building, helping people or them helping me or, you know, whatever, but I don't have anything to show for
that. Right. Yeah. Like, yeah.
There's like, no, hey, like, look at this blog post I did, or here, look at this email I wrote, or, here's this big pile of, you know, sacks of money that I made. it just doesn't always work out that way. But, again, it's all those steps that come over time. With that said, Casey, what was your childhood dream growing up?
This is really hard. You know what? I had, so I was a high level gymnast. I was actually at the elite level when I was at age 12. So, I was training about 35 hours a week for a 12-year-old. That's insane. I was on track to go to the Olympics in 1996. So that was really my dream, was to be an Olympic gymnast from an early age. And when that didn't happen, it was like I had no more dream. I really didn't have anything I really aspired to be, or, you know, really had any drive or really felt that I was somebody as an individual, of somebody as with substance. And it took a really long time. I think it took, you know, all these things finally falling into place for me to actually feel that I have this dream again. Yeah, that was a really great question. I loved it.
But that said, what do your dreams for the future look like?
So, you know, I have some really fun dreams, I guess. One of my main dreams with the DJpreneur is actually to any DJpreneur that I've ever helped or I ever communicate with or that ever comes into my list, I would love to travel the world and see them DJ live. I just, like, that is, like, one of, like, my main dreams to do. That's kind of, like, it. Like, yes, I would love to make a lot of money with my DJpreneur. That would be really great. But I'm kind of living my dream right now. Like, I have an amazing husband. I have two amazing children. I get to DJ at one of the most amazing places in Singapore. I get to travel in Southeast Asia and DJ at really cool places like a bar on a beach, or go to the Middle East and DJ when I can. I still get to coach gymnastics, and that's always been like something that's really great. So that really is funny dream of just like traveling and seeing all these DJs DJ is just, that's pretty much like that dream that I want to do. Like, it wouldn't it be so cool if I could do that? If I could come and travel and see all these DJpreneurs doing their thing. That's my dream.
Oh, I think that's a great dream and a great goal that hopefully you'll be able to accomplish in the coming years.
Mm-hmm. I just need to make a little bit more money so that I can do that.
So before we share how people can connect with you, Casey, is there any last thoughts you'd like to share?
With a lot of me, I haven't really hit that like success part yet. You know, I'm still kind of figuring out what direction to go with the DJpreneur. I have a really good idea. I have a pretty good group of people around me, and a lot of things that I found that's helped me a lot is if I focus on one thing at a time. Like, if I focus on, you know, just getting, you know, like I did, I just launched my membership site, and I got so zoned focused in on that. Like, it turned out to be really great. I do need to work on a little bit more to get get more people involved in that. But this whole like focus is this way to like not multitask is a really great thing that I found for myself, and I think for other people to actually, you know, follow their dream and get to their dream. Like, yes, you have this big dream, or you have this big picture. You know, if you map it out and you pinpoint exactly what you need to do to get there, even if you don't know and you just try to think of ways of getting there, you will find that way. You will get so focused and you will be able to find that way. So that's my final thing is, you know, just get focused in on it. And if you don't know, once you try to get as close as you can to it, you will get there. Like, don't give up.
Well, you started to touch on the whole multitasking thing. I mean, multitasking is a myth. At least to me, it is.
Yeah.
You just switch tasking, and it takes longer for your brain to get back and forth to, you know, to do those things. I would agree that you do need to focus down. And that was something that I talk about, is you can go for one, maybe two things at a time. But outside of that, you've really... It's tough. You're at that point, you're just doing those things. You're not like necessarily succeeding at them. But once you get those one or two things done, once you get that accomplishment, then you can move on to the next thing. And that's why I have my Evernote, chock full of ideas and things that I want to do. And yep. I'll tell my wife, and I'm like, but it's just because I'm saying it doesn't mean that all of a sudden I'm going to do it tomorrow. It just means like it's going into the Evernote, and at some point I'll probably pull it out and, you know, take a fresh look at it and try to do it, you know, when and where I can.
Awesome. I love that. 'Cause, you know, I'm one of those people that has like a full notebook of ideas, but not all the ideas are good, you know? So you just keep sitting on it for a while. You might be able to figure out if they're good or not before you even try.
Well, it was like when I was growing up, I was like really into writing poetry. And, you know, one of the things a teacher would tell me is don't erase anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you can cross it out, but just lightly cross it out, because you might come back to it and be like, oh, wow, if I just change like these two words, it'll make more sense. Even after you've already maybe written three or four or five lines down. So, yeah, don't erase it, because then your brain has to work that much harder to remember what it is that you wrote, when really it should just be concentrating on what you're doing at that moment.
Very cool. I love that tip. Thank you, Joe.
No, you're very welcome, Casey. So I would love for you to plug your website and how people can connect with you.
All right, cool. So my website is called The DJpreneur. That's http://www.thedjpreneur. That's theDJayPreneur.com. And you know what? I I'm kind of like sick of Facebook, and I just want people to stop hitting me up on Facebook unless it's a message. But I'm focusing on Twitter. I love Twitter. I'm like kind of addicted to Twitter now. So come and find me on Twitter. I'm at Casey Lane. So CasieLane.
Awesome. Well, I'll have both those in the show notes. And when you say, I thought you were going to say hit on rather than hit up.
No, that hasn't happened in a while. That's all right. I'm cool with that.
Well, Casey, I really enjoyed having you on the show today, and I would love to have you on the show again at some point to follow up and see how you've been.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Joe. I really enjoyed our time together.
Awesome. Well, it's all my pleasure. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dreamers Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Dreamers Podcast. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/Dreamers Podcast. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Dreamers Podcast, please send an email to j@jpar.co. This podcast is copyright 2014 by jpar.co.